straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 271, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck. Kirk Bowles, we're moving ever so closer to Alabama, Texas. And what better way to get this thing going than invite the mouth of the South, Paul Finebaum, host of the popular Paul Finebaum Show on the SEC Network and all over the world. Paul, how are you, sir?
Hey, I got to tell you a quick story, Sed. So my wife, who doesn't know anything about sports, but she thinks she does, she's watching the SEC media days, the day we had Kirk on. And when I called her that night, she said, "Man, that guy, he's been around almost as long as you have." And, I wanted to say, well, actually, it's maybe a year or two longer. But I thought, to your wife, you really don't need to convince her of how old you are.
Exactly. And I keep waiting on you guys to get invited to be on one of those Jurassic Park movies. But they had
So, Paul, did you ever think you'd see the day where Texas would be a 3-touchdown underdog to Alabama?
No. Oh. Kirk, I'm on the yesterday, whatever day it was, with Stephen A. Smith. And he is screaming and hollering.
Of course. I know
he's never done that before. Okay. About how Texas is going to get beat down. And I found myself, I had to defend, because that's just the way it goes on those shows. Mm-hmm. I had to defend Texas, saying, I don't think they're going to lose by more than 20 points on the road. I mean, at home in Austin. I'm like going, what is wrong with this world? When it wasn't all that long ago that Texas was on top and Alabama had Mike Shula as its coach. And here we are, 15 Texas coaches later, we're having this conversation.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the wrong Shula. It's fun to listen to Stephen A. pretend he knows about college football. What he does is he just brings Paul on there and starts screaming. That's what.
Well, I think he said something like, "said and don't forget, you know, when A&M goes to Tallahassee later this year," I'm like, "going what?" Well, I mean, he meant Tuscaloosa, but I'm not going to interrupt a guy who
makes $6 million a year. Yeah, that's only like twice what you make, Paul. So I mean, you're not struggling. You and Kirk Bowles are set for life, but. I got to ask you, you know, Nick Saban as well as anyone. And I had an epiphany the other day, Kirk, I didn't tell you this. So I was thinking back to the 2009 championship game.
Right.
And Nick Saban's on the dais and I see this ball guy and Paul, it was you. I know. I remember the voice, but I didn't know you yet. And Paul, I don't know if you remember this, but I know you got a memory like a trap. You go, "Nick, you guys are practicing behind that, got that big old wall at your practice. What's going on behind that wall?" And Nick's just deadpan, "We're just practicing. We're just practicing." And I had no idea who you were. And that, Duck, you remember, Mac Brown charmed the pants off the Alabama media. And then the Alabama media was like, "Man, we wish we could cover Mac Brown." And we were like, "No, we wish we could cover Nick Saban."
No, I was I knew Mac a little bit through his brother Watson, who was a coach in Birmingham, and I mean Mac said hello to me there, and I'm like going, "Man, I mean that was Mac Brown. He was huge. He was bigger than Nick Saban
at the time.
What happened to him?
He beat Nick Saban.
Where is he now? Where is Mac Brown now? And Stead and I've had a lot of fun. We're on the Longhorn Network. I think Game Day is going to do something this weekend on what would have happened if Colt McCoy hadn't gotten hurt on the fifth play of the game. Where do you stand on that? I mean, do you think it would have changed dramatically?
Yeah, if I could go off the record with you guys for a minute.
Nobody's watching.
I grew up knowing Texas. My girlfriend in high school went to Texas. A lot of my friends went there. So I knew the arrogance of Austin. But man, I never dreamed. I mean, that week, I felt like I had overalls on and a pitchfork the way those Texas fans treated me out in California. And I couldn't. And I normally don't care, but I was so happy after that game. And then the Colt McCoy nonsense started. And it's still going on, of course.
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't have made one bit of difference. I mean, I don't care if Colt McCoy had, didn't have a scratch on him. And by the way, that's, blame Mac Brown for calling a stupid play. And then some guy called the other day and said, I don't think Colt was really that hurt. It was his dad. I said, I don't care who it was. They still lost the game. And can we move on to another topic?
Did Marcel Darius blow his dad up too?
I think he did.
He blew everybody up. I blew everybody up. So, and you know, what might have changed is toward the end of Mac's reign here, there was so much talk, Paul, we've talked before about Nick Saban coming to Austin. To revisit that a little bit, and I'm writing about it later this week. Do you think Nick wanted the job? And, you know, that stuff's always hush-hush behind closed doors. You know, do you think he would have come if that had been a hard offer and had been kept quiet?
Kirk, I think he would have. He's a wanderer, or he was. And I think around that point, they were feeling like maybe they weren't being respected enough, and maybe they weren't. And if you remember, Bill Battle was the athletic director at the time. And Bill Battle was a no-nonsense guy. I mean, he can deny this all he wants, but there was a growing tension there. And I'll tell you a funny story if you promise not to. Well, I don't care if you do or not. I think it was 2015, I was doing an outside the lines profile of Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, nice. So I'm flying on a plane with him back from Connecticut to Tuscaloosa. And I asked him specifically, even though we all had sources, you had better sources than I did, but I had plenty of sources that were indicating what had already transpired. So I asked him on camera, I said, Coach Saban, can we address the Texas situation? How close did that come? He said, oh, I never talked to him. That's just something that, I think he said, you guys created. And I like, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you're on a plane with this guy. It's not like, I said, I moved on to another subject. So, cameras got put up. The camera guy's in the back of the plane sleeping. It's the outbound plane. And we sat out there. We had about another 30, 40 minutes. He looked at me. He said, yeah, that thing got pretty crazy, you know, and Sexton's talking to this guy and that guy. Really? And he said, but in the end, he said, just too many people to deal with. I was just simply not going to deal with all those guys all those boosters who think they run the show. And I'm like, going, this guy just got through telling me on national television that he never talked to him, and now here he is. I mean, I'm like, going, what did I miss?
You're a political science game.
And by the way, at that moment I started to think maybe everything Nick Saban says isn't true.
Absolutely. They all lie.
Only if their lips
Jimmy
are moving.
Sexton, yeah. Jimmy Only Sexton was all over this. And he's Nick Saban's mouthpiece. Those are semantics. We know.
No, it's true.
His man was talking to Texas.
It's always back channels.
There's no doubt. And it had already been reported at this point. You know that. It had been reported seriously. In fact, I had done a book with Gene Wojciechowski.
Right.
And Gene had it was not my source. Gene had a source. That we used in this, it was like an afterthought in the book, by the way. It was like a bunch of notes you're cramming into the final couple of pages, and AP or somebody picked it up and said Nick Saban offered $100 million according to some new book. And I'm like, going, that's not what even the book wasn't even about that. But so my point is, Saban knows all this, of course. But he didn't care. He wasn't about to acknowledge it, but I have no doubt. If there were a few less people involved, he probably would have done it. And listen, I've heard the other side from Mac Brown. We used to spend every Sunday morning together in Bristol, Connecticut on ESPN. So can I tell you that Mac Brown will confirm that story? You guys already know the answer to that. Of course.
Yeah, and he was trying to kill it. Mac was desperately trying to hang on.
And I was, speaking out of school or in school here, I don't know how many times Mac Brown has spoken to Nick Saban since.
You're probably right. So,
well, you know, they'll have to speak before the CFP. No, I'm just playing. 361. We were, Kirk remembers this, we were at the football banquet, and Mac, we knew Mac was done. We knew he just looked done his last season, and he's cracking these jokes and nobody's laughing because everybody's depressed. And it comes across, Twitter had just come out and we all had our little phones, and Nick Saban got an extension that night.
And that's what it was all about, as you guys know. It was Jimmy Sexton, and I'm sure I'll get in trouble because as a reporter covering the SEC, you are not allowed to speak what I'm about to say, but it was just typical Sexton shenanigans, mm-hmm. playing everyone against everyone else. And he took Alabama for I don't think Bill Battle – I had a source tell me in the middle of all this, guys, that Bill Battle said, I'm done. I'm not giving this guy any more money. And then here comes the Texas rumors, and guess what? He got more money.
That's how it works. That's the way it works. Well, moving ahead to this game, I mean
– Oh, do we have to?
Do we have to?
A little bit. I think
riveting. This is riveting.
This is so good. Does Texas have a chance? Does Alabama have a weakness? I mean, they look better than last year.
Yeah. I mean, all I can do is point to a couple of games from last year. If you're looking for hope, mm-hmm. I remember being in Gainesville. I remember being in College Station, and then of course, actually, I wasn't in College Station because I didn't think that game was going to be any good. let me correct myself. And I was in Auburn, and those were the three big road games last year for Alabama, and they almost lost. They lost one and nearly lost the other two. Mm-hmm. It took a last second save to beat Florida, and it took four overtimes to beat Auburn. And my point is that Alabama sometimes, whether last year is this year, can go on the road as a double digit favorite and get carried away mm-hmm. with the moment a little bit. And that is a fact. I mean, so I've seen the weather forecast, which is going to be 90 something degrees. Mm-hmm. And that is a neutralizer. I mean, everybody is equally worn out. Now, does Alabama have more depth? Of course. But Texas has a couple of players. You guys know that. And
They do. My thing is this. I believe this is the Nick Saban revenge tour. I think before this last game, he told his players to pretend that Utah State was actually the Texas A&M Aggies, and and he's going to roll through Austin like Sherman through Atlanta, and then Aggies are going to come to Crimson Tide, and he's going to try to 77-0 them again. So that's where I am with this. I know that Texas has some players. Bijan Robinson is a great young running back.
Yeah.
But you're asking a guy that last threw a pass before last week in the 11th grade. That was the last time he played a football game.
It was a good pass, too. A
serious football pass. 11th grade. You're asking him to go up against Will Anderson and Byron Young and those guys. Freshman left tackle.
That's fair.
That's what scares me.
They're top 12 offensive linemen, Paul. Seven of them are true freshmen.
Okay. By the way, I wish you'd told me this the other day before I went on with Stephen A. Smith and pulled out of myself.
I watched that. You shut him down. You got raves for shutting down Stephen A. You got raves.
Well, the key with Stephen A, guys, is I mean, we are friends, and I'm not. It's not like I'm just saying that because you just don't say you're friends with Stephen because he doesn't have any. So he likes fun. He likes to have fun. He doesn't. Yeah, you know, I don't think he likes these intellectual wars that he used to have on there. And he's not going to get that with me. I mean, you know, with Stephen A, if you beat him in the argument, you're not coming back. So you.
You got to know your place.
For a while. He has Michael Irvin on every week, and boy, that's a clown
yeah.
show.
I feel like I'm basically the Washington Generals playing the Globetrotters.
Hey, I hope Texas isn't the Washington Generals on Saturday. We're still waiting. When the heck is Texas going to arrive? When are they going to get to the SEC? And how would you say the SEC as a group of 14, soon to be 16 teams view Texas? Is it an emperor without any clothes?
Yeah. There's a we're kind of a melting pot on our show of all the different fan bases. And I was in Arkansas last week. They can't stand Texas. I've been to Missouri. They don't care for Texas. We know how the the Aggies feel. Alabama doesn't need another ego in the room. Florida doesn't need one. So it, I think there's going to be a lot of tension, which I know you guys are all ready for.
Hey, nobody does drama like Texas, okay?
I'm just looking forward to seeing the pomp and circumstance. I mean, College Game Day is going to be there. And the Corso is going to put on that horse head, and I love the pageantry of college football, and I can speak.
Yeah, you've got the other show too, don't you? The one that,
and the big noon kickoff.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Are sorority girls and fraternity guys screaming, "Hey, big noon kickoff's coming with Urban Meyer"? I would be concerned if I were in a sorority that Urban Meyer was coming to my campus.
Have you ever seen a worse person?
I won't equivocate.
Continue. I mean, Deshaun Watson thinks that Urban Meyer shouldn't have gotten another job. I mean, that's how bad it is. What TV executive goes, "Oh yeah, he was dancing with a 21-year-old woman. Let's give him $5 million."
Guys.
So they reached out to me. They reached out to me to come do a behind the scenes thing. They texted me on Tuesday, and I just politely declined. I've got I got things to do on Friday.
Yeah, no. Like, well, first of all, you don't want to. I've been around Urban Meyer and through Tebow. It's impossible to socialize with Urban Meyer, but I've been to social events with Urban Meyer. In fact, I'll tell you a story, guys. Tim Tebow, you become friends when you work on a show with somebody for 8 or 9 years, and he got married 2 years ago, and nice. He was getting married in Cape Town. Mm. I don't want to tell a long story here, but you would hope a guy like Tebow would marry a nice librarian in Gainesville. He married the former Miss Universe, of course. And the wedding was in Cape Town, and my wife and I were talking about it. And it wasn't the fact that it was going to cost a fortune to go, which did affect me very greatly. But the idea of being stuck in Cape Town for 3 or 4 days with Urban Meyer made me ill. So I politely declined.
Oh my God. He would make Cape Town feel like a phone booth. It's not big enough. New York City's not big enough.
So. Hey, I wanted to ask your opinion on the 12-team playoff too, Paul. Is that too many? And is they going to dilute the regular season somehow?
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course it is. But we are about to enter the NFL phase of college football, which is good and bad. What will happen to the games like this? They really won't. I mean, this game doesn't matter a whole lot anyway, because we know what's going to happen. But, Oklahoma, Texas, think about that. I mean, there are years when you really do have to win that game with a 12-team playoff. You do not have to win that game. You can survive a couple of losses. As soon as I want to argue against it, though, Kirk, the NFL seems to be working pretty well. And I think we'll adjust. It will, instead of you lose a game and are you in after one weekend, it's can you then figure out a way to get in between 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12? And I think it will still be as exciting. And the other argument is, and it's been said many times, I mean, the 14 playoff doesn't work because it usually is the same four.
Right. I think it's gotten stale. I do agree with that. But
what's going to be really funny is when that number 13 team is just going crazy. We got robbed. I can't believe they did that to us.
You know it'll happen.
One of the best 12 teams like this. 12.
I pick one guy. If it happens that way, because he was number 5 2 years ago, I want to hear Jimbo Fisher being number 13, just whining and crying, because he's got experience at it.
I'm going to guess that you're going to be at that game.
Yeah, I will make that game, partly because I'm currently in the middle of doing a book about that controversy. So I feel like it wouldn't be a bad idea to show up that weekend.
Oh, when is that going to get published, man? That's
If I ever start writing it,
when do you have time? We have no time.
So that happened, of course, in May. And I don't know if you guys dabbled in the publishing world very often or at all. It's a rather
co-written two books. Yeah.
I had a really interesting experience about 8 or 9 years ago with somewhat of a memoir. I mean, I thought I was too young to do a memoir, but anyway, I did. And, you know, the big time New York literary agent. So, I mean, the book did well. I mean, like, other than the person who wrote it and the person who published it, no one really cared. But it did well enough. And I think I tried to contact him about 3 or 4 years later and never heard from him again. I mean, just typical New York. So the day after Jimbo goes insane, well, excuse me, Jimbo.
Goes Jimbo.
Yeah, goes Jimbo. I get an email from this guy. Say, is this your, you always know this is great when they say, hey, Sid, is this still your email? That means you haven't heard from this guy.
I've had for 20 years. Yeah. My email. Yeah.
Sure. So I'll speed the story up. There was a big publisher who saw it in the Wall Street Journal or something and said, hey, you represent the bald guy from wherever. Can we do a book? And it, that's not normally how it's done. No. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, you know, they made what I thought was a reasonable offer. And here I am.
You got a title for the book?
No. And again, that is the premise, but it really goes into the underbelly of college football. You mentioned the agents. I think that would be a pretty interesting chapter, how they completely screw ADs over on a daily basis. And the NIL card and now the playoff card. So yeah, if I wait long enough, the book will write itself.
Yeah, but the feud is over. We were both in Atlanta, Paul.
Yeah,
and Jimbo said, no, it was just a little misunderstanding. I have total respect for Nick and everything he does. So he came around very quickly.
I thought Jimbo was. I thought Jimbo outpointed Nick during media days, though. I mean, Saban acted like, oh, you were. It was like a pickup right. basketball game, and we had a disagreement. And Jimbo said, yeah. Saban didn't get any questions about it. And the first four questions I got were about that. And they're all from Alabama.
That means they're afraid of him. They're afraid of him.
Said, I cannot talk about that on a public because, I mean, we're not allowed to admit that the media is afraid of Nick Saban. That would not play well in Peoria.
One more question I have for you, Paul, is that he likes Sark, doesn't he? He really seemed to have a lot of respect. So does he want to win 77-0?
I don't think he does. What's interesting about this relationship, he does not like Kiffin. So Kiffin and Sark worked together at SC, as you guys know. They were friends.
Right.
I remember, in fact, I was doing College Game Day my first year at ESPN because the SEC network had not launched and they just needed somewhere to push me and put me, actually. So I remember being in Washington one weekend. Sark was the coach, and Kiffin did our show. It had been 2 weeks after being fired at Southern Cal, and he was staying with Sark. Can you imagine? Back in the day, and I'm not making any judgments, of course. But so they you know Kiffin got Sark to Alabama, you know, trying to on the redemption tour. So everybody forgets that Sark took over. He coached the national championship game. Against Clemson. And if you want an opinion, I'll give you one. I thought he did a lousy job. I didn't think he was prepared. And as a result, Alabama lost a game on the final series when Deshaun Watson did lead them down the field. Yep. So he gets named the offensive coordinator, and then he takes another job to the Falcons. And you would have thought after all that, Nick Saban would say, I'm done with you. But I think Nick Saban, as he has gotten older, realizes that he's already fired or almost every coach or assistant coach in the country or had them leave. So he took him back when he really needed him and he really did need him.
And O'Brien, he's different than, you know, I'm not the big O'Brien fan at all. I mean,
nobody is.
He gets no pub at all. And could he not get another head coaching job?
I think he could. But right now he's got a really good gig. I mean, it's not like Saban's going to go off on Bill O'Brien. I mean, he's part of the family.
Right.
And that's the Belichick family for those of you out in College Station watching. And I think eventually he will. I always thought that if Saban walked out, that O'Brien would ease in there. But I'm not so sure about that now because I don't think Saban's walking out.
He keeps
it looks like it.
He keeps getting extensions. He's not
well, going I was so there. Glad to see him get that extension.
I know. I know.
And by the way, not to be cynical here, but I thought it was great. You know, when he said, when Greg Byrne, the athletic director with a straight face, said, and we're just so happy to be able to make Coach and Miss Terry comfortable by extending this contract. I mean, you wouldn't want them to go hungry at $12 million a year, would you?
I wouldn't. Especially after he said that the name, image, and likeness is going to ruin college football. I mean, but thank God he got his money. I mean, heaven forbid a kid get a Toyota Corolla on the cheap. No. I mean, yeah. So
I'm sure, Alabama, they don't get Toyota Corollas. That's for
heaven forbid a guy get a.
That's for the that's for the lesser schools. Okay.
Hey, players at Texas drive nice cars, but they get them towed once in a while. So.
Yeah, I heard that. But yeah, by the way, I bought a Toyota Corolla once early in my career. I thought I had a Mercedes. I mean, I was so proud of that car because it actually ran, unlike the previous car I'd had.
Great air conditioning, and I put $150,000 on mine.
Oh, they'll run forever.
By the way, you know Saban has a part ownership in a Mercedes dealership in Alabama and Nashville. Yeah. Wow. I'm sure there's no connection to the campus.
Yeah, got to make those ends meet. Got to get in where you can, Paul. Got to make those ends meet. So
well, I know if Sark doesn't get this thing turned around, they'll make another run at Saban in 2026 or 27, and he'll get another extension. I'm sure. So.
Is there a short list for who will replace Sark if this doesn't go well?
Well, we do know Del Conte loves James Franklin. Okay.
Well, he needs another extension.
He needs another extension, too.
He hasn't had one this week.
Sark got an extension after 5-7.
Yeah. Well, he has improved the mood since the artist formerly known as Tom Herman.
He has.
Tom never lost to Kansas.
Yeah, and he won all his bowl games too.
You know, one thing before I let you go, and I told Kirk this, we met with some fancy doctors a couple of weeks ago and spoke at their event.
Ooh.
They were talking about chemistry and how tight knit the team is, and I go, man, give me a locker room full of jerks that go 10-2 over a bunch of good guys that go 5-7. Good guys don't always win, and you know the guy with the black hat usually rolls into town. And comes out victorious, and that's what's going to happen this week.
Got to have dogs.
Yeah, but if you go back in the history of the University of Texas, if you go back to Darryl Worrell, those probably were not nice kids, were they?
No.
Back when they were getting players drafted and winning championships, and stuff.
They weren't nice kids not then, and now they're just crotchety old men who follow me and Kirk around. They do.
Isn't that amazing, guys? The players that wouldn't talk to us when we were young now are saying, hey, I played for Darryl Royal.
Oh, I love it. Well, we're going to miss you. We're sorry you're not going to be here this weekend, but
I don't like the sight of blood, especially orange blood.
Wow. There you go.
On that note, I love it. You'll see him.
He's going to be talking about this game on the SEC Network for the next couple of days. Check him out on ESPN and on your radio dial. Paul Finebaum, always a pleasure, my friend. We will see you down the line, sir.
This was a blast, guys. Thanks, Kirk. Thanks, Ed.
You're the best. Take care, Paul.
You got it.
On Second Thought.
Look, I just chuckle when Paul Finebaum comes on. It's just always such a great conversation, man. I could talk to that guy all day.
He's fun, isn't he?
Man, he's just
unfiltered.
He has this way about him. He's so unassuming. He's so freaking cool. He's funny. Mm-hmm. And he's self-deprecating like us. He's the kind of guy I want to go have a beer with. I hope one day we'll get to all break bread with him and go have a drink.
That'd be fun. He'd be fun. It's interesting. He's writing a new book. That'd be a great book.
That will be I'll buy it.
Well, I don't know when he has time to write it. But,
I know. He's so freaking busy. I mean, yeah, I guess maybe on vacation. But so for those who want to hear from the irrepressible head coach of the Texas Longhorns, we had some really good conversation with Sark on Monday, Duck. He is in a good mental place. His guys are comfortable They know what they're up against. Let's check out what you ask him to start the presser this week.
Since you spent time at Alabama, did you feel like they have an intimidating presence that some teams are beat before they take the field? And what's it going to be like just matching wits with Nick?
I think a couple things. I think one, it's like anything. You know, anytime you're on top, you know, I think teams can sometimes be enamored with the opponent, you know, whoever they are. I remember our days at USC in the 2000s, we felt that a lot. I'm sure we felt it here at Texas in the 2000s. Anytime Vince walked on the field, they probably felt that way. And, you know, I think what Alabama's been able to do, it can get that way. I think the best approach is to focus on what you need to do. You know, at the end of the day, they're going to have 11. We're going to have 11. The ball's going to get snapped. You know, and the ball's probably going to get snapped upwards to 200 times. And how many times can we be right out of those upwards to 200s? You know, as you guys know, with Coach Saban and myself, I have the utmost respect for him, not only as a man, but as a coach. He's tremendous at game planning. He's a very good schemer in all three phases, offense, defense, special teams, and he's a really good motivator. Does a nice job motivating his team and getting them ready to play. So for us, for me, you know, the challenge is I can't worry about what he's doing in their locker room and in their team room. I got to shift my focus on making sure that we're game planning really well, that we're scheming really well, that our guys are motivated to play and have the right mental intensity, you know, not just on Saturday, but on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, so that we've got good focus and that we can go perform.
Duck, they're ready. They're ready. But the one thing, you know, and I think it's a rough test for them. And you know, it's one thing if they, you know, I would rather see them play the Aggies than Alabama. The Aggies are really good, but the Aggies aren't a world beater yet. They aren't. They don't run the ball very well yet. They have pretty good defense, and there's history there. And there's just something about Texas and A&M where you just think the Longhorns are probably going to pull it out because of what they did in the history of that rivalry. But this is Alabama, and this is the Nick Saban revenge tour. And I don't think he's leaving a stone unturned, Duck. I think he is out for blood. Paul said as much. I don't see a bloodbath. He's out
for blood. He is, but I don't think he wants to embarrass Sark like he does Jimbo. You know, I think he's – I don't know if out for blood is the right phrase. I just think he is so damn committed and determined and laser focused. Is, you know, I mean, even when A&M beat him, there was a one score game, and I thought that was like the worst performance Alabama's ever had.
That was Bryce Young's worst game for sure.
It was terrible, like Paul reminded us, they had a close game against Florida, had a close game against Auburn. Had a close game against Alabama, won all those, and then remember Jameson Williams gets hurt at the end of the season in the playoffs, so they were without him. So I don't know. They sure seemed like a full strength Alabama and an easy number one team, and they won't be sleepwalking into, because you know they're not playing 5-7 Texas. They're playing name brand Texas, and
They're playing. I'm going to send them. We got to send a message to Texas. This is what you're going to get every year you come over to SEC Texas. That's what they're playing. They're representing the SEC as well, and they want to send a message to the Big 12 that you're not the SEC. And I know your blue blood is feeling good about the win over ULM, but we got something for you. And you're right. I don't really think he wants to crush him. I really don't. But no, I do believe that they're in for a 22-23 point beatdown. To that end, I asked Sark basically what he was up against, and I used a video game analogy. Check it out.
Hey, Steve. I know step up in competition goes without saying. Going from Glass Joe to Mr. Sandman or Mike Tyson.
That was a great video game, by the way.
Whichever.
I used to play that at 7-Eleven when I was at Birtland Middle School. Yeah.
A lot of
my money got dumped into that
thing. Pocket full of quarters. So, but you're no stranger to this. You took over a Washington team that was 0-12, and you were a big underdog at home to USC, and you guys beat them. USC was number 3 in the country. What do you remember about that week of preparation And what went into getting that upset done?
Yeah, I mean, very similar scenario in that, you know, I'd worked for Pete Carroll for 7 years and had a great deal of respect for what he did, you know, and what we were able to do in our time there. You know, again, I think it was buying into the idea of what the game plan was, where we needed to be from a psyche standpoint. I thought one thing about that game that I remember vividly is we weathered a real storm early in that game. They might have had their first two drives. I think they might have rushed for about 130 yards. I mean, we didn't stop the run for anything the first two drives of the game. But our guys just kind of hung in there, and they fought, and they scratched, and they clawed. And next thing you know, it's a tie game in the fourth quarter, and you got a chance. And so I think inevitably, you know, that team at that time, very similar to this team at this time, buying into the idea of the idea that the work you put in throughout the week ultimately will carry over to game day. And, you know, a guy once told me, you know, culture a lot of times can have the opportunity to beat talent when the culture is really strong, when the chemistry is really strong. And so we got to make sure our chemistry is right Saturday as well, that we're play as a team and not just talented individuals. And so that'll be a big focus of ours this week as well.
He played that game. He knows what it is to go up against Sandman or Mike Tyson, whichever genre you played. I believe that he has belief in his guys. And he has some good guys, some good players at a couple of key positions like running back, like wide receiver, and maybe at defensive end. I don't know, Baron. Will we ever hear from Baron Sorrell ever again? Was that a flash in the pan? Or dare we dream that he could be a dependable pass rusher? I don't know.
Yeah, well, proof's in the pudding. We got to see it consistently, and that's one thing that Sark keeps us in. You got to be able to do it each week. You got to play to a standard each week, and you know they keep saying, "Well, it's a faceless opponent." That'll be harder to convince, you know, his Longhorn players that Alabama's faceless, because you see their faces everywhere. You can't turn on TV without seeing, you know, Bryce Young and Will Anderson and guys like that. So, you know, they need to keep the game close early. They got to get the ball to their playmakers, which means get the ball to Bijan in space. That may mean throwing to him more get him out in the perimeter. And they got to get the ball to Xavier Worthy. I mean, don't just throw deep to that guy. Throw over the middle. Throw some slants. Throw some curls. And you got to get the ball.
End around. And you can run.
End around, exactly. And you know, it was a very vanilla game plan. You know, he didn't want to show Alabama, you know, very much, and you know they got the job done. So but yeah, their best players have to play at their best to have any chance at all.
And for me, I'm looking at this defense. I'm looking up front. Snacks, Coburn, Vernon Broughton, who was kind of quiet last week. Alfred Collins hopefully is back.
Byron Murphy was kind of quiet.
That can happen in a blowout. You got because they pulled a lot of those guys out of the game because they know what they're going to be up against.
And they played 76 players, which was good to see.
Yeah, it was good to see. And on the offensive line, young Kelvin Banks Jr. Welcome to the big time, young man.
Welcome.
This is a trial by fire for you.
Yeah.
You won't face a better defensive front for the rest of the year. And if you start, if you give a good accounting of yourself and you keep that young quarterback clean, the Texas Longhorns might be in this game in the second or third quarter. But they have to avoid, Duck. This is what they have to avoid. We both watched NBA in the 80s. The Lakers would be in a tight game, and all of a sudden Magic and company, James Worthy, Showtime would show up, and they run off 15 points in a row. And in football terms, that's like 21 points. The Crimson Tide can score 21 points in 3 minutes. That happens all the time. You have to avoid those runs. And if you can just avoid those runs, take the air out of the ball. That's another basketball term. Take the air out of the ball, make it more of a mutter and less of a track meet. Maybe. I don't believe it's going to happen that way. I think Alabama's too good, but I'm just saying, if you're Texas, this is what you have to try and do to stay close to a juggernaut.
Yeah, you want to shorten the game. You want to keep that clock running any way you can. I don't see any way they keep Quinn Ewers clean the whole game. They're going to put pressure on him. Now, they didn't have a sack. Alabama didn't have a sack against Utah State. Didn't force a turnover, but they only allowed 7 first downs. I think maybe 1 in the first half and like 136 total yards. So they can't have Quinn Ewers running for his life on every play. Now, I would wonder, I might do a move in pocket a little bit. And
he's not, and he's not really a scrambler.
No, he is not a scrambler, but by design, you got to give Alabama some different looks.
Move that pocket. Move it.
Move the pocket a little bit. And the other thing I worry about is special teams. And, yeah, they got a block punt and a scoop and score by Keylon Robinson. But, you know, Isaac Pearson.
Come on, Ike. Hold on to that ball, Ike.
I didn't like him in August. He had a lot of ugly punts. And, you know.
I mean, when he caught it?
Well, I don't know. I think, and he didn't punt the last two times, so maybe he's already lost his job. And then, you know, he fumbled the snap on the Bert Auburn's kick. So, and it's a new kicker, you know. So
then they brought in Hudson Card to hold after that.
Yeah, it was smart. I think quarterbacks should hold if they can because they're used to catching the ball.
Not if you're Romo.
Yeah. Oh, no, exactly. Except you want Romo to score. After he bobbles the snap. So I think special teams don't give Alabama anything cheap, you know, like either an easy score or great field position. But there's so many things you got to do on your checklist to keep it close. But, you know, first and foremost, you got to believe you can do it, you know.
And I think they have the belief. Bijan believes. Quinn Ewers believes. Snacks believes. Their core guys believe, but I just – they're so young.
You get so punched in the mouth, too. Yeah.
Oh, they're so young. They're so young. Yeah. And I think that great programs can bring their younger kids along a lot slower. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with what Sark dealt with last year, you got to play these babies. You have to play them, and you have to – they have to grow up fast. And – so Banks is getting his initiation this weekend, as is Cole Hudson, guys like that. Those guys are young, Duck. Yeah, those guys are young. God. Cam Williams,
seven freshmen in that offensive line. And, you know, and Alabama played 10 true freshmen in their game against Utah State, which won 11 games last year. So, you know, that wasn't a bad team that they were playing and win 55-0, and Bryce Young barely played into the third quarter, but Alabama played 10 true freshmen and 4 of them were receivers. So, you know, they got so much depth there. So you want to avoid serious injury in this game. You want to avoid damage to your psyche in this game. There's a lot of things on Sark's checklist.
Before we get out of here, Duck, the NFL season starts.
Yeah.
On Sunday, the Dallas Cowboys are playing host to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday Night Football. And is this the year the Cowboys finally break through, Duck? We're only, 27 seasons removed from a Super Bowl. So
they're due. I mean,
if you're playing the patient game, you're not worried about it. But for those who aren't, is this the time that the Cowboys finally, with this talented ball club, do they break through and make a real serious run in the NFC?
No way. I mean, I'm not counting on Dalton Schultz to lead this team to the promised land.
So, I like Dalton. You know,
they lost Amari Cooper. They lost Cedric Wilson, Michael Gallup coming off injury. They lost James Washington. They lost their left tackle.
Tyron.
You know, I just think they're going to have some difficulty this year. I really do. And luckily,
they're going to win the NFC East.
No, I think Philadelphia will.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I like Jalen Hurts. I like their weapons.
You like AJ Brown.
And they got Devontae Smith and Sanders and Gainwell in the backfield. I think Philadelphia is the class of that division. But I don't think Dallas is going to get Buffalo's my team. I'm all in on the Bills.
I think Josh. Football, Duck.
Huh?
to win a Super Bowl? They're 0-4. They're not going to win a Super Bowl, Doc.
They came within, what, seconds of beating Kansas City on the road in one of the wildest finishes ever.
That's fun.
I got Josh Allen, MVP, and I'll take the Bills over the Rams. Who you got?
I'm so tired of you thinking like me. I'm so tired of that. I'm taking the Bills to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl.
You could take the Chargers. That was my second best team, but they're in the same conference. So.
You know what? I think those two might end up in the AFC Championship game. I really don't like Kansas City without Tyreek Hill. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think Marcus Valdez-Scantling is a suitable vertical replacement for Tyreek.
Give me a couple of sleeper teams that you think, they may have good years. Watch out for them.
I'm always scared to pick a team that lost in the Super Bowl. The history's not good there, but the Bengals are really talented. I think Pittsburgh is gonna be average. I don't like Mitch Trubisky. Sleeper team in the NFC, the 49ers are gonna win that division. I think. No, I mean, no, the Rams.
Rams. How about Trey Lance,
The 49ers are gonna make the playoffs, and they're gonna win a playoff game with Trey Lance at quarterback. But I think the Rams are better. Look for Arizona to make some noise. If they can right the ship without DeAndre Hopkins for 6 weeks.
Well, they got Hollywood Brown. They got James Conner, touchdown machine. Decent.
In the AFC, man, don't sleep on the Ravens, Duck. Don't sleep on the Ravens. Lamar Jackson's playing with a chip on his shoulder. He shouldn't be playing. I would hold out. I mean, he's got his mama trying to get him a contract extension, and no agent. Lamar smarten up. But I like the Ravens. I like the Ravens to make the playoffs. I don't think the Steelers will make the playoffs. So Baltimore is my sleeper. I'm going Buffalo over the Rams in the Super Bowl. League MVP will be Justin Herbert. I think he's going to go crazy this year. I think he'll throw 50 touchdowns.
I agree. He's a hell of a player. The AFC is just loaded. I got two teams, to me, they're sleepers. I think the Raiders are coming on. Derek Carr, you know, they got Josh McDaniels coaching there. They got Waller. They got Davante Adams. Derek's coming into his prime. You know, they got to get more out of Josh Jacobs. But I think the Raiders are going to have a big year, and look out for the Dolphins.
No.
You got Tyreek, who just happens to be on my fantasy team. You got Tyreek and Jalen Waddle and Tua. I think the passing game may be fixed, and they're going to have to run the ball a little bit better. But I think – I'm not saying they're going to go crazy and win 12 games or anything like that, but I think they can go, you know, 500, maybe go, you know – a little bit better than that. I think Miami's kind of on the rise.
And before we get out of here, congratulations on the best draft ever. Your sitting Ducks team with Tom Brady and Austin Eckler and Joe Mixon is one of the best fantasy league collections of talent I've ever seen. And I'm playing you in one, and I'm going to lose, but that's okay.
Yeah, you only have the best running back, Jonathan Taylor. Derek Carr, Davante Adams hookup. I'll be groveling this time next week, I'm sure.
That's not going to happen. But for now, let's put a bow on it, because me and you got to go eat some Chinese food, though.
Let's go.
We're going to eat.
Lotus is calling.
Big thanks to Paul Feinbaum for dropping some knowledge and bringing the laughs to our little podcast. We always appreciate him. And that will do it for episode 271. Of On Second Thought. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.